This episode of World Corrupt is brought to you by ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol Probiotic.
Your first drink for a better tomorrow.
Saudi Arabia have been all but confirmed as host for the 2034 Men's World Cup after its only other rival for the tournament, Australia, decided against making a bid.
You take over at Newcastle United by PIF, the Saudi Arabia Investment
Fund. Did you order the murder of Jamal Khashoggi?
An admission, the journalist is in fact dead and the Saudis killed him.
Cristiano Ronaldo has signed for Saudi side Al Nassr.
Saudi Arabia's pumped astronomical sums into the game that we love.
A country that treats women like second-class citizens. A country that throws its own citizens in jail for social media posts.
You suddenly have an army of defenders and apologists for anything the Saudis would have been accused of over the years, overnight.
Roger Bennett?
Tommy Vitor, is that really you?
Roger, are we back?
We are back! Like Tracy Chapman.
Season 2 of World Corrupt. I'm so happy we're doing this and that we can be together again and that you were able to get a Tracy Chapman reference into the podcast within the first 60 seconds of recording. I hope that makes me your cuddly Luke Combs.
Oh, I think my work here is done. But Tommy, some things never change, mostly because I've never left Season 1, to be honest. I've just been sitting here in my studio, in the dark, floating in space, a bit like Matthew McConaughey in Interstellar, trapped behind the bookcase, just waiting for you to return.
Well, it's a good thing that Saudi Arabia has decided to insert itself into our lives and the lives of sports fans around the world. They're acquiring teams, leagues even, competitions, and just generally reshaping the international order and sporting landscape as we know it. So, fun.
Yeah, the way you said that, and just generally reshaping the international order, just doing that, you know? Including the 2034 Men's World Cup, which we'll get into. But as you said, Thomas, we are back for Season 2 of World Corrupt. And for those of you who listened to the first season, welcome back. But if you're new, hello, friendo. We've been expecting you. And as McConaughey himself once said, love is the one thing we're capable of perceiving that transcends dimensions of time and space.
America's greatest poet, Matthew McConaughey.
I don't know what it means, but it's beautiful.
No idea what it means. For those of you who did not happen to hear Season 1, it focused on the 2022 World Cup in Qatar and the process through which global football's greatest competition was awarded to a country smaller than the size of Connecticut with an awful labor and human rights record, and the way the world and we as sports fans reacted to that or didn't react.
It's a real feel-good story. Actually, one that ended quite surreally after the World Cup final won by Argentina with Lionel Messi, as Salt Bae decided to just insert himself into proceedings during the trophy presentation, as you do. Almost the perfect living, breathing symbol and proof that it's always darkest just before it goes pitch black or something like that.
If you don't know what we're talking about, please Google Salt Bae and Lionel Messi. Trust me, it is worth it. But on the bright side, Raj, we ended sports washing for good. So that was nice.
Did we?
I don't know that we did, Raj. But even better news. You don't have to have listened to Season 1 of World Corrupt to make sense of what we were planning to unpack this season. But one thing we should do is remind you who we are, as this podcast appears on both the Men in Blazers and the Pod Save the World feeds. So we are simultaneously guests on each other's pods.
As if any Men in Blazers Media Network listeners do not know who you are, Tommy. Oh, always with that New England modesty. Don't know what we're going to do with you. But in the off chance they've missed the memo, Tommy Vitor, he's like a podcasting Tom Brady, complete with high cheekbones. He's one of the founders of Crooked Media and former President Obama staffer. And above all, a bloke that I somehow convinced. I feel very proud of this. I also feel a little bit guilty about this, to support the greatest team in the world, Everton Football Club.
Some will say convinced. Others will say tricked. These days, the cheekbones are around just to hold up the bags under my eyes from being a new dad. Anyway, I am nothing if not loyal, Raj. Once I nail my colors to the mast, I am ride or die. And for all the Pod Save the World listeners, Roger Bennett is the founder of the Men in Blazers Media Network, the number one independent soccer media company in North America and in my heart. He is also the author of the New York Times best-selling autobiography, Reborn in the USA, about his journey from Liverpool to being an American citizen. It is a truly great book that was extolling the virtues of Tracy Chapman long before it was cool again.
A feel-good immigrant's tale. It's a bit like a mashup of Yentl and Scarface. But enough about us, Tommy. Let's talk more about exactly what's brought us here today. Why are we here?
You're definitely more Yentl than Scarface. But Raj, as I mentioned earlier, even before we started our last series on Qatar, there was another tangentially related geopolitical story sweeping global sports.
The PGA Tour has agreed to merge with Saudi-backed LIV Golf.
Big boxing news. Anthony Joshua will face former UFC champion Francis Ngannou in Saudi Arabia.
Despite backlash from some fans, WWE plans to move forward with its crown jewel event in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia as originally planned.
Now, Raj, Saudi Arabia has amassed so many global sports assets that A&E is threatening to give them a reality show. I wrote that joke. From ownership of the LIV Golf Tour to hosting an F1 race in Jeddah. And then there's boxing, MMA, esports.
Tommy, as the age-old saying goes, first they came for our esports. But even more than that, Saudi Arabia has pumped astronomical sums into the game the world loves. Soccer, football, both at home and abroad, with the goal of ultimately hosting the next available World Cup as their ultimate prize.
That's right, listeners. The World Cup is at the center of this series once again.
Because less than a year after Qatar, it was revealed that Saudi Arabia will be hosting World Cup 2034.
Presumably that's because they pulled out the stops with a spectacular presentation and a competitive bidding process.
Close. And by close, I mean they were somehow the only country that ended up being left in a place to even bid to host the tournament.
Wait. How is it possible that only one country wanted to host the World Cup? Did the invitation go to Australia's spam folder or something?
Don't you hate it when that happens? Old spammy spam. It's a slightly complicated story that we will go deep on a little later in this podcast. But at the heart of it all, once again, it's our old pals. At FIFA.
The Fédération Internationale de Football Association. I feel like that was offensive, that accent.
Oh, I love it when you speak to me in your love language, Tommy.
Who, as I just mentioned, are global football's governing body, a group that season one guest, former Department of Justice official Matt Miller, said was among the most corrupt he had ever seen. And Matt worked in New Jersey politics. In fact, he worked for Bob Menendez, the U.S. senator recently busted with a stash of gold bars in his house. But that's a story for another jury.
Yes, that very same FIFA, in their infinite wisdom, learned absolutely, well, nothing from the moral outcry that provided the drumbeat all the way into World Cup 2022 in Qatar. They actually managed for this one to conjure a process grounded in backwards, twisting legalese reasoning that we'll try to parse in a later episode. Ultimately, it made it a fait accompli that of all of the 211 nations who are its members, Saudi Arabia and Saudi Arabia only would be awarded the World Cup hosting rights. But before we get ahead of ourselves, let's start at the beginning.
That's right, Raj. What we're going to do in this four-part series is explore why Saudi Arabia is diving into football and what it all portends for the future of sports in general and for soccer specifically. We'll get some help from friends and experts along the way, and we'll really try to make sense of it all. You ready to do this, buddy?
As an iconic American once said, starting from zero, got nothing to lose. Maybe we'll make something. Me, myself. You know what, Tommy? I'm starting to sound worse than even Jonas Blue.
Okay. So our mission here is pretty clear, but this is a complex story with so many moving parts. It can be hard to know where to even begin.
I will answer that call, Tommy. I will grab the mic, like your overeager friend who's just had a few too many beverages at karaoke night and cannot wait to belt out Oasis, Wonderwall, Liam Gallagher style. I will start, where else? With the football. And the way to Saudi Arabia's influence in the game now extends from the streets of Riyadh all the way to Newcastle, a proud industrial town in the northeast corner of England in which beer and football and the right to go shirtless to sporting events in the middle of winter is an inviolable freedom.
Is that the English version of Suns Out, Guns Out?
Oh, but before we get to any of that, we've got to talk about the history of soccer in Saudi Arabia, because unlike Qatar, which essentially attempted to manufacture footballing culture out of nothing, they literally imported fans from Lebanon to act as if they were Qatari fanatics to cheer in temporary stadia built out of shipping containers ahead of the 2022 World Cup, which was all artifice. Those fake fans watched host Qatar crap the bed, losing all three games, crashing out bottom of the group in a humiliating opening round exit. And I don't know how you say Schadenfreude in Arabic. Oh, but in Saudi Arabia, Tommy, there really is a true, authentic football culture. And to help us go all 23andMe on their soccer roots, we've enlisted the help of an old friend.
I'm Tariq Panjer. I'm a sports correspondent with the New York Times based in London.
I cannot tell you how much better it makes me feel to know that Tariq is riding with us again, Raj.
Oh, he is. He is incredible, Tommy. He's a singular journalist and storyteller who has an incredible grasp on football culture around the world, especially in the often opaque web of finances that lay underneath, around FIFA, emanating from the orb. He's got an ability to string it all together. And we asked him about the source of the river of football in Saudi Arabia.
This is a place that had this obsession with football, which a lot of places with the connection to Great Britain would have. Britain was heavily enmeshed in the Middle East, Saudi Arabia, among other places, and leaves that legacy of football. And it is seen as this kind of game that you should build clubs around, athletic clubs. So you'll have swimming and a place to hang out on Sunday, and they will have at the top of all of the sports, a men's sports team, men's football team. That will be the main event, as it were.
Look, I should say, Raj, it's sweet that they have great football culture, but this is America, baby. We don't care about any of that stuff. We care about two things. One, complaining when the NFL broadcast shows Taylor Swift. And two, winning. Where did the Saudis fall on the scale from Everton to DJ Khaled?
Oh, my God. You're asking if they do the winning,
yes,
as my father calls it, the non-losing. Well, here's the reality. On the international level, where Saudi Arabia takes on other nations in competitions like your World Cup, the answer is kind of. They won, and there's still ballads being written about this. The 1989 Boys Under 16 World Cup, which was held in Scotland, and it doesn't sound like much, but it remains the only time a Middle Eastern or Asian country has won a major men's global tournament of any kind. And while at the full international level, they've not won anything outside of Asia, they've given their fans, and this is what is important about sports, they've given them moments to dream.
Again, the Saudis break very sharply. What a terrific run this is. Wonderful piece of football. He's still in here. Oh, that's the greatest goal of the tournament.
That's World Cup 1994, RFK Stadium in Washington, D.C. Saudi Arabia are facing Belgium, and Saeed Wairan picks the ball up in his own half and proceeds to treat Belgian defenders like Flemish and Walloon parking cones before smashing one home in one of the all-time great World Cup goals the tournament's ever seen.
So, Raj, I was not familiar with this goal or the word Walloon, so I went back. I Googled both, and Ola Wairan is like some kind of Riyad Deion Sanders. That was just an incredible goal.
Oh, yeah, it is. He is absolutely Saudi coach prime. And yes, it is just one goal in one game, but that's the beauty of World Cups, the power of them. Here's Tariq again.
For a young kid, the World Cups are such a big deal. It was such a big stage, and you see this. And you're not thinking about politics or any of these other big picture ideas of how the world is run. You're thinking about, look at these people, you know, running on this patch of grass, full stadium, and scoring goals.
This is what World Cups are all about. They produce transcendent sporting moments. They're cultural moments. They're really political moments that inspire entire generations. And in this competition, Saudi Arabia's first ever big boy World Cup, they managed to survive and advance out of a very tough opening group that included the Netherlands, very good at football, Belgium, think they're very good at football, Morocco can be incredibly good at football before falling to Sweden in the round of 16. Some performance, and these were really the green shoots of an entire generation in a nation growing up and dreaming henceforth from that moment on of World Cup glory.
So Raj, again, this is all nice and romantic and beautiful, And I don't want to harsh anybody's mellow who's listening. But when did the Saudis come in and dump oil on our heads like some kind of end of game Gatorade bath? That's the part of the story I want to get to.
Well, Tommy, grab a towel and some dish soap because we'll get there right after this break.
World Corrupt is brought to you by ZBiotics. Let's face it, Raj, after a night with a couple drinks, I don't bounce back the next day like I used to.
Oh, Tommy, I do love that phrase, night with drinks, which sounds like some kind of lost Charles Bukowski novel.
He would have loved a little bit of ZBiotics in
would
his life,
though,
Raj.
Tommy?
Because with ZBiotics, you never have to choose between a great night out or a great next day. ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough next mornings after drinking.
Rough mornings after drinking, the inevitable sequel to Night with Drinks. And the sequel, Tommy, oh, it's never as good as the original, is it?
No, except for The Godfather. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in your gut. It's this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for your rough next day. ZBiotics produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. Just remember to make ZBiotics your first drink of the night, drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow.
Oh, Tommy, don't take away my toxic byproduct. It's all I've got. But this is actually the perfect product for Premier League fans in America. We know a thing or two about early mornings. Can I suggest drinking one before your first scotch on Friday night? And then when you wake up on Saturdays, you feel amazing. And you just have Everton's ineptitude to ruin your day.
Just go to zbiotics.com/corrupt to get 15% off your first order when you use corrupt at checkout. I love our little code here. ZBiotics is backed with 100% money-back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember, head to zbiotics.com/corrupt. Use the code corrupt at checkout for 15% off. Thank you, ZBiotics, for sponsoring this episode and all our good times.
Night with drinks. World Corrupt is brought to you by Smile Actives. Are you self-conscious about your smile due to stains? I know, it depends where they are. But are your teeth aging you? Are the producers of this show trying to tell me something by giving me the lead on this ad read?
We'll never know. Popular food and drinks are known to stain teeth. Beverages like coffee and wine stain them over time. So what can you do to brighten your smile? Well, you could give Smile Actives a try. Smile Actives is safe, effective, easy to use, and will keep you smiling proudly. I use Smile Actives every morning and every night too, by the way. And the best part about it is how easy it is to use. Simply add Smile Actives Pro Whitening Gel to your regular toothpaste. It's been formulated with PolyClean technology to boost stain removal and deliver active whitening ingredients into teeth's grooves and crannies to get better whitening.
Do you only do it twice a day? I do it four times, Tommy. And one thing that's become a massive fad in recent Premier League circles is extra bright teeth. And I can't say for certain, but my guess is now that Jurgen Klopp, the great Liverpool manager, is using these beauties to brush up on his Teutonic German and smile. That is Chinese.
Rush, that German accent is absolutely terrifying. But 97% of Smile Active users in a clinical trial reported up to 5 shades whiter on average, all within 7 days. Smile Actives is the whitening boost your favorite toothpaste needs to give you the smile you deserve. Visit smileactives.com/corrupt. Go today to receive our special buy one, get one free offer, plus free shipping and handling. That's smileactives.com/corrupt. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details. Okay, so when we left off, it was in the Sun and Frosted Tips Janko Jeans 90s, which unfortunately appear to be back in style here in Los Angeles. I wish I was kidding. In Saudi Arabia was daring to dream. They were scoring bangers at the World Cup and creating a real, authentic football culture. So what happens next?
Let's get in the DeLorean, hit 88 miles per hour, and fast forward to the late aughts if we can.
Saudi Arabia had been on the sidelines for you could say a decade or more, watching their smaller but equally ambitious local neighbours pile into football in a way that, in different ways, was unprecedented.
Raj, I don't get it. Unprecedented how?
Unprecedented kind of like by going Roman Roy and just buying entire teams, hips or hearts. It didn't matter.
We bought the Hearts.
Hearts Football Club?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
Why? Because it's the Hearts. It's your team.
I'm Hibs.
You're Hibs. Are you sure?
But I assume they knew which teams they were actually buying?
Well, that's debatable, Tommy. But we're going to go chronologically here, starting in 2008 when the United Arab Emirates brought Manchester City, now a footballing superpower without peer. But back then, they were decidedly the other team in Manchester, and they took this club who'd been a wonderfully ramshackle, deeply passionate, but always the Roger Clinton to Manchester United's Bill. And they transformed them into a dynastic serial winner. Should be said a serial winner with many, many, many financial charges currently sitting against them, which is a long conversation for a completely different podcast.
Sounds like a hell of a deep tease for World Cup Season 3. Who was the other neighbor of Saudi Arabia that was getting into football, though?
I have a hunch you've heard of them, Tommy. Let me give you a clue. It starts with a Q and ends with an atoll.
Our good friends in Qatar, whom we spent the entirety of Season 1 talking about, a podcast which, did we mention, is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, that starts with a P and ends in oddcasts. A reminder, really, of a life truth that the only people more shameless than these nations when acquiring football clubs, it's Tommy and me when chilling the podcast we made about them. But back to Qatar, who, long before they hosted the 2022 World Cup, purchased French club Paris Saint-Germain, a football team since transformed essentially into a luxury brand.
I was going to say, Raj, Paris Saint-Germain sounds like a fragrance you can't afford.
Yeah, Paris Saint-Germain does sound like one of those aftershaves that you actually don't apply directly onto your own skin. You just put a little poof into the air and then walk backwards through it, the mist, three or four times to let it coat your skin. Qatar soon populated PSG with the glitziest and most expensive stars, footballers as baubles, essentially, that money could buy. They quickly shattered the transfer record to sign Brazilian generational talent Neymar. They followed that up by snatching up the GOAT, a gent who's since moved to Major League Soccer's Inter Miami and seized his destiny as the ultimate Florida man, Mr. Lionel Messi.
And I see he's bought the jorts to prove it, that he's a Florida man. Beautiful, Lionel, beautiful. But it is strange, Raj, that during this period, the Saudis, who actually love football and have a shit ton of money, were just sitting on the sidelines watching their neighbors get a soccer glow up.
Yeah, they were. Until they weren't.
You're hearing whispers that, oh, look, the Saudis are interested in buying football clubs in Europe. Big clubs. And then there was this rumor about a team in the northeast of England. Newcastle
upon Tyne. What a place. It's really a place of mind. Have you ever been there, Tommy?
No, but I've been to White Castle.
Oh, that sounds like the oldest version of I've been to paradise, but I've never been to me. But come to think about it, the UK government honestly has treated Newcastle essentially like a White Castle burger. No nutritional value, barely worth the effort it takes to digest. And the northeast of England it's an incredible area, proud area, a historic area, but long neglected. It was once the industrial heartland, place of coal and steel and shipbuilding. But in Newcastle after the Second World War, the coal mines shuttered, the shipyards closed, and an entire region, a proud region, the communities inside of it were devastated economically, essentially left to atrophy.
Austerity is a hell of a drug.
Yeah, but Tommy, assuming our listeners want a more nuanced, non-fast food related answer to a what is a Newcastle question, we called someone proudly born and bred there.
My name is George Culkin, and I'm a senior writer for The Athletic.
Now, George has been covering football from Newcastle since 1994.
It's a very, very working class city. Those heavy industries that I've talked about before, coal mining, shipbuilding, those industries that we've lost over recent decades, we're far closer to Scotland than we are to London. There's that sort of little chip on the shoulder about being ignored from London, central government. And, you know, certainly if you're talking about the coal mining aspect, the shipbuilding aspect, sort of industries that were allowed to wither and die, and nothing was kind of given back to us to fill the breach. So there's always been a sort of sense that we've been ignored by the rest of the country or patronized. there's still a huge amount of deprivation in the Northeast in term, and, you know, poverty and unemployment. And yeah, it's been that sense that we've just been left to rot.
Now, they may not have jobs or a government that cares or, you know, hope or even the sun in Newcastle, but they have pints and they have pubs and they have Newcastle United Football Club, a team that play in an almost mythical frothing cauldron of a stadium, St. James's Park.
It's very easy to kind of lapse into romanticism and stereotype on this, but St. James's Park is literally right in the middle of Newcastle-upon-Tyne. It's on the hill. They call it the Cathedral on the Hill. It's there from every approach to the city. You see it. You see the stadium, first of all. It looms over the city, and it looms over the way the city feels.
Joe Linton must be for Gordon! Newcastle United take the lead against Arsenal!
You know, there's always just been that sense that football sets the tone. And when the team is doing well, the city does well, and vice versa. So there's been quite a lot of times in my lifetime when it's felt like neither is doing very well. But when there's momentum behind the team, there is a, you know, the word that people use is buzz. And that's how it is. There is almost a tangible feeling in the city of this buzz hum.
I know that feeling. I love that feeling. You have a team on a hot streak that just electrifies an entire city. Where has that momentum been recently? Are they buzzing? Are they buzzkilling?
Oh, God, when he said that thing, a team on a hot streak, honestly, I wanted to scream with every ounce of my being. I wouldn't know, Tommy. I'm an Everton fan, Chicago Bears fan, a Chicago White Sox fan. All I know is losing, but thankfully, this show is not about me. You're asking about Newcastle United. And honestly, under prior management, which took over in 2007, it was straight down the cliff face. That was their progress. Phew. Here's Tariq.
Unfortunately for them, they found an owner who just wanted to make them more miserable, it seemed. An English businessman, Mike Ashley, who essentially owned the team to just sort of settle. It was the tyranny of mediocrity, if you like. There was nothing to be hopeful about at Newcastle United under Mike Ashley, a man who made an empire out of selling discount sports goods through his Buy Them Cheap, Pile Them High Sports Direct brand. And that it was that kind of cheapening and debasement of Newcastle United.
So I have to admit something to you, Raj. Ever since we started working on this episode, I've been picturing Rick Astley. So I had to get it out. So now you guys are all thinking of him too. You've all been Rickrolled by this goddamn podcast episode. Moving on. So Ashley debased one of the world's proudest football clubs, but he did offer cricket bats at an affordable price. Is that what you're telling me?
Tommy, the honest truth is we all assume at this point that you are thinking about Rick Astley. I'd say about 87% of your living, breathing moments. And we also know this is another truth. Life is all about compromises. And this club, Newcastle, this beacon of light in the Northeast, working class England, but mired in a relegation battle team, was just being stripped for parts, stripped alive, honestly, under this gent, Mike Ashley. And this is the team that Saudi Arabia bought.
So, Raj, one thing I just want to clarify. When you say Saudi Arabia bought this club, who exactly do you mean? Who is signing that check?
Oh, Tommy, great question. And no, King Salman is not walking onto the field at St. James's Park and presenting him with one of those beautiful, comically oversized polystyrene checks. What we're actually referring to is this entity, the Saudi Public Investment Fund.
I guess I pictured him rolling in a bunch of barrels of oil, but sure, the PIF. Those guys also cut a $2 billion check to Jared Kushner, Trump's son-in-law, shortly after he left the White House in what was absolutely not a kickback for services rendered while Trump was still in office.
Here's Tariq on what they actually do.
The Public Investment Fund is one of what are described as sovereign wealth funds. These are investment funds or investment companies that invest money on behalf of entire countries. So the United Arab Emirates has one, Qatar has one. These are usually hydrocarbon economies that want to invest their gains from what they have, the assets, which is usually oil or gas, and then start sprinkling that out in the world and investing them in diverse sectors to turn a profit through these investments. It is spending Saudi Arabia's money in the country or outside, investing in an array of services, products, things that you use every day, Twitter if you want, or is it X these days, Electronic Arts, the company that controls that video game formerly known as FIFA, has Saudi money in it. I mean, everywhere you look.
Okay, Raj, let's fire up the old Google machine. So the Saudis invest in Uber, Blackstone. They put money into countless venture capital funds like the SoftBank Vision Fund, which invested in WeWork, DoorDash, Slack, and about a billion other things.
Tarek mentioned Electronic Arts Sports and the PIF. It also invested in Nintendo, Capcom, Nexon, and Activision Blizzard. Oh, for all of you gamers out there.
Ooh. Oh, they got Boeing. But that stock's been a real winner these days. Meta, Facebook, Disney, Citibank, Bank of America. Right, they own 10% of Heathrow Airport. Is there anything these guys don't invest in?
How much of Crooked do they own?
Can't disclose that here.
And by the way, as far as I know, they've yet to invest in this podcast. But who knows by the end of it. Saudi Arabia, call us. Our ad rates, they're very affordable.
Mr. Crown Prince, you have my email. And so now I guess they can add an English football club to this list of investments?
Exactly. And in 2021, the Saudi PIF, that public investment fund, bought 80% of Newcastle United with two private equity firms who helped grease the deal, splitting the rest. And one of those firms is run by someone called Amanda Staveley. She lives in Dubai. She helped facilitate first that Manchester City purchase from Abu Dhabi back in 2008. But they'd argue the 20% means Newcastle is not, in fact, solely owned by the Saudi state. It's held up often as proof of that.
An argument is legally sound as the great judicial precedent of he who smelt it dealt it.
Objection! Overruled.
The Premier League just let this happen? Surely they aren't in the business of letting governments just run soccer teams, right?
Oh, Tommy. This is the important part, because the PIF, before the PIF was allowed to take over this team, assured the Premier League, which puts all potential owners through what's called a fit and proper test, that it was not in any way, shape or form, the Saudi government. No. The Saudi government is that. We're the PIF, something completely different.
The fit and proper test. I love that. I'm now imagining the PIF leadership doing pull-ups and sprinting around a track somewhere. Here's Tarek.
How that works in practice is a mystery today as it was then, because going back to that org chart, at the top of it is Mohammed bin Salman.
So Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince and prime minister of Saudi Arabia, he's running the government and the PIF.
He's an incredible multitasker. It's the very same gent.
We'll talk a lot more about Mohammed bin Salman, or MBS as he is commonly known, in the next episode. But for now, you should know that he is the 38-year-old de facto ruler of Saudi Arabia. MBS has pushed for considerable social changes in the kingdom. But according to a report in The Economist, he was called Little Saddam by his friends and family when he was a child. So that should give you a sense of his temperament.
Little Saddam Hussein, like Saddam Hussein, the former Iraqi dictator.
That's the one. Fun guy. But regardless, Raj, it is just nonsense to suggest that the PIF is somehow independent from the Saudi government. All the concerns we might have about Saudi policies or government behavior would also apply to the PIF.
So here's Tarek again on what that tells us.
It's a sovereign wealth fund. The clue is in the name, sovereign. It's Saudi Arabia's state wealth fund. The person who runs it is Mohammed bin Salman, and it is Saudi Arabia. So to this day, we have to just take the Premier League's word for the fact that there are these legally binding assurances. I have no idea how this is being tested or how it is being controlled in any way.
Okay, so here's where I think we need to point out that the Premier League didn't just let any sovereign nation buy a club like they did with Manchester City. They greenlit an acquisition by a country that throws its own citizens in jail for social media posts, Raj. A country that treats women like second-class citizens. A country where there's not even a pretense of freedom of expression or association.
So just for one moment, let's revisit exactly how we got here with Saudi Arabia. Sorry, not Saudi Arabia. The PIF. Nothing at all to do with Saudi Arabia. Let's just make that clear, Tommy. But Saudi Arabia investing in Newcastle This it's another world, this place. It is a once proud city that both time and the British government, both of them, are discarded. They are the people that live there, incredible. They are so mad passionate for their football. And after almost being tortured by this yob of an owner, Mike Ashley.
Raj, I got some bad news for these fans if they're worried about being tortured by their team owner.
But for now, these Newcastle fans, in this moment, when Saudi Arabia descend up, sorry, not Saudi Arabia, the PIF descend upon their city, they feel like they've received the footballing golden ticket to the Willy Wonka factory. But classifying it as a little bit of a moral dilemma, that's a bit like classifying me as just a little bit bald.
You have a beautiful scalp, my friend. So, Raj, when the Premier League approves this deal, how do Newcastle fans react? Are they upset?
It's the nicest thing you've ever said to me, that anybody's ever said to me. A beautiful scalp, I will take that. And in terms of your question, we'll find out right after this break.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Wise, the account that helps you manage your money all around the world. Dining in dollars, doing business in baht, wherever life takes you, the Wise account lets you send, spend, and receive money in different currencies.
I've actually requested we receive all payment for this spot in Rhinestones, which, as you'll know, we used as currency on the Micronesian island of Yap 500 years ago. Why am I telling you something you already know, Tommy? But it turns out that's the one currency even Wise don't do.
Raj, I don't know what you've heard, but 8,800 pound, 12 foot tall stones are not the easiest way to connect your finances internationally. They won't do the job if you're trying to buy that dream property in Portugal or freelancing in France, but Wise will. It makes it so simple without hidden fees or exchange rate markups. Wise works in over 160 countries, so your money's always at your fingertips. Wise is the best way to make your money work across borders. Minimum fees, maximum ease, full speed. Join 16 million customers and learn how the Wise account could work for you by downloading the app or visiting wise.com/crookedworld.
World Corrupt is brought to you by the Human Rights Foundation, a truly incredible organization which is helping make World Corrupt possible.
For those of you passionate about fighting for human rights, mark your calendars for June 3rd to 5th because the 2024 Oslo Freedom Forum is heading back to Norway.
Bite your arm off for a trip to Norway in June for those days of never-ending sunlight and endless piping hot bowls of foddy coal, the national dish of Norway, which consists of mutton, cabbage, and whole black pepper.
Wow. Not to mention the Oslo Freedom Forum, where you'll hear from courageous individuals who are pushing boundaries, challenging oppression, and driving positive change. Don't miss this opportunity to be part of the global movement for freedom and democracy. Visit OsloFreedomForum.com. Go today to get your tickets and use the promo code CROOKED for 40% off day passes. That's OsloFreedomForum.com. Use the promo code CROOKED.
We are so grateful for the support of the Human Rights Foundation and encourage those of you who love this podcast to look deep into the work that they do. Foddy coal.
Okay, so before the break, the PIF, which is definitely not the Saudi government.
No. Definitely two wholly different things.
This totally separate entity had bought Newcastle. And we were getting a temperature check on how fans were squaring this moral circle, which is actually the name of a dance Mike Pence did at his wedding.
Oh my God. It is Tariq.
So to go back to the day of the takeover, it was chaos, a carnival atmosphere in Newcastle. So on the day the takeover is announced, you see Newcastle fans making a pilgrimage to St. James's Park, to the spiritual home of their club, to celebrate the takeover by Saudi Arabia. And in among the famous black and white striped shirts that Newcastle wear at home are fans dressed in traditional Saudi clothing, including the checkered kaffiyeh that Saudis and people from the Gulf wear on their heads. It was a remarkable scene.
Raj, that sounds like a Halloween party that gets you canceled after your neighbor posts photos of it on Facebook. But catch me up. How has this worked out for Newcastle in terms of the club's success?
Look, they spent almost $500 million on new talent to stock the roster, with $485 million in transfer fees at last count. But somehow, it's felt sensible, because you compare it to the other Gulf State takeovers. Qatar just immediately plummeted in, signing the glitziest names they could and unfurling them at Paris Saint-Germain. Newcastle, in comparison, they've signed extremely pragmatic, prudent players like local academy product Dan Burn, a 6'6" galloping giraffe of a defender for a cool $9 million.
That is entirely too tall. Okay, what about the coach? I'm assuming they brought in some kind of soccer Bill Belichick. Sounds like there's a gap in the market for sleeveless hoodies in Northeast England.
Again, you'd be surprised, because Belichick was available.
Still is.
By the way, if they are listening, they're writing down, Belichick. Interesting. But they initially have taken a more cautious approach here. They hired an emotionally intelligent, almost boyish British manager, a really lovely guy named Eddie Howe, who steadfastly refuses to comment about his new employers. His approach, it's always stick to sports, lads.
So, I'm well aware of what's going on around the world, but my focus is on trying to produce a team to win football matches and get enough points to stay in the league, and that's all I talk about. My specialist subject is football. It's what I know, it's what I've trained to do. As soon as I deviate from that into an area where I don't feel qualified to have a huge opinion, I think I go into dangerous ground. My focus is football, running the team. That's all I'm going to talk about, and that's all I'm going to think about.
That kind of excellent press conference punting is very Belichick-like, so good for Eddie. But in terms of success, I assume they're better than 20th place now? Started from the bottom, now they're...
Well, last season they did leap up. They came fourth, a place so high it qualifies for the lucrative Champions League, which is club football's biggest global competition. Think March Madness, with your Real Madrid, your Juventuses, your Bayern Munichs, the powerhouse teams of the football world. Suddenly Newcastle, from this slumbering regional giant, they were big time again. It's an accomplishment that legendary Arsenal ex-manager Arsene Wenger once described as like a trophy in and of itself.
Fourth place? Not even a bronze medal? What are we, Canada?
You're so American.
Bill Belichick would spit on your moral victory. What about off the field? How has the club evolved since the Piffs takeover?
Well, there's also, and it should be noted, an almost instant, quite remarkable makeover, radical makeover of Newcastle United's suddenly quite lucrative commercial side, bringing in such impressive sponsors. You may have heard of them as Noon, the largest online shopping destination in the Middle East, and Sela. Oh, a company who say they redefine experiences, events, and destinations in Saudi Arabia.
Hey, was that a secret ad read? Are you trying to slip one by me that our team doesn't know about here? Regardless, Raj, I wonder how they got in contact with those two companies. They wouldn't happen to be owned by the PIF, would they?
Was it Agatha Christie, Tommy, who said, one coincidence is just a coincidence, two coincidences are a clue, and three coincidences are proof? So let me just add that it might not shock you, Thomas. Newcastle's official airline is Saudi Airlines. So the answer's, I guess, very yes.
Thank you, Agatha, for that. Okay, so does this make Newcastle fans happy?
Oh, Tommy, that's complicated. Let's ask George.
The Newcastle that wins, it makes it a productive city. It makes it a positive city. You know, if we don't have that heavy industry anymore, you know, we want people to come and visit. We want people to see what we've got to offer the world. And it's not just our beautiful city. It's our beautiful countryside. It's Hadrian's Wall. It's our beautiful coastline. It's castles. It's, you know, museums. It's art galleries. It's like really vibrant cultural life. And Newcastle United being successful on the pitch showcases all that in a way that nothing else can. And so the takeover has brought that and is bringing all that. And yeah, there's a lot of baggage that comes with it too. But when we've been ignored for so long, it's something that's incredibly valuable. And this is a very precious moment.
I suppose it's better to be piffed off than piffed on, Raj.
Oh, Tommy, always dropping that Tom Woodick wisdom into your podcast scripts.
Agatha Christie said that as well. Okay, talking about the PIF, do they see their fourth place and a spot in the Champions League as some sort of success?
We asked Tariq that very question, Tommy, but we've got a hunch that it just isn't all about the Champions League.
Saudi flags, people talking up Saudi, and on social media, you suddenly have an army of defenders and apologists for anything the Saudis would have been accused of over the years. Overnight, Newcastle United supporters, many of them at least, have turned into experts in Gulf policy. An army of propagandists sort of emerge as a result of a football takeover. I've not seen something like this in this scale.
So like the Saudis bought their own kind of set of Swifties here, Raj? Is that what we're learning?
Oh, don't drag me into the, some beef between Vitor and the Swifties on this one, Tommy.
I have no problem with the Swifties. I love all of you. My point is, social media was a mistake.
Oh, yeah, here's what I'd say. If you remember, the PIF bent over backwards to prove almost gymnastically that it was nothing to do with Saudi Arabia at all. Well, within 8 months of the takeover, Newcastle United debuted an alternate shirt for the first ever time in green and white, a colour combo which the club have no history of. They've never worn anything approaching that before, but it just so happens to be the exact same colour palette of, yes, the Saudi Arabian national team.
Oof, very subtle. Okay, so we've got Saudi Arabia moving aggressively into sports, and soccer in particular, essentially locking up hosting duties for the 2034 World Cup. And we've got the PIF buying Newcastle United. But what we don't have is a motive for why Saudi Arabia is so interested in sports in the first place.
Oh, Tommy, we'll end the way we started and let Tariq give you a little hint.
You have to look at the politics of Saudi Arabia to understand the impetus in sport and football. And you have to look at the rise of a chap called Mohammed bin Salman, who, until the latter part of the last decade, was relatively unknown, still very young, a man in his 30s. And it's to do with the dynastic ruling structure of Saudi Arabia.
That dynastic ruling structure and the geopolitical history of Saudi Arabia, coming up in episode 2.
I'll just stay here until we take...
That's why I love you, Raj.
So I think it was Agatha Christie that said this, never going to give you up.
No.
Never going to what? Let you
no.
down.
Let me out. World Corrupt is an original podcast collaboration from Men in Blazers and Crooked Media's Pod Save the World. Alongside Roger Bennett, I'm your host, Tommy Vitor.
The executive producers and writers of World Corrupt are me, Roger Bennett, my great friend, Tommy Vitor, and the remarkable Men in Blazers, Jonathan Williamson.
From the Crooked Media side, our executive producer is Giancarlo Bizzaro. Our producer is Ilona Minkowski, and our associate producer is CJ Ferroni.
For Men in Blazers, our writer is a magnificent bearded wonder with three names, Zach, Lee, Rig, with all audio editing and mixing coming from the unbearably talented mighty Max Jaffe.
Original music and audio engineering by Vasilis Vatopoulos. Our video producer is Kirill Palaviv, with additional support from Milo Kim and David Tolles.
Social and promotional support for Men in Blazers provided by Charlie Kitt, Randy Kim, Evan Ramis, Sophie Morrison, and Hayden Gray. Production support from Jordan Dalmido. And a special thanks to Men in Blazers Managing Director Scott Debson and Marty S.
Special thanks to Cricket Media's Julia Beach, Adia Hill, Kayla Moriarty, Ewa Okulate, Ashley Simon, Bernardo Cerna, Madeline Herringer, and Matt DeGroat.